This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Hello and welcome to Scran, the podcast passionate about the Scottish food and drink scene. I'm your host, Rosin Derskine, and it's that time of the year again when whisky lovers from all over the world descend on Speyside to celebrate their favourite drams and all things whisky. In a rare treat and another exclusive for Scran, I went along to Speyburn Distillery recently to get a private tour and went behind the doors which have not been open to the public in 125 years. I met distillery manager Ewan Henderson, who comes from a whisky distilling family, who showed me what visitors can expect when they open the doors for this year's Spirit of Speyside Festival. We're in the courtyard at Speyburn Distillery. We're standing almost directly opposite the pagoda, which looks like it's attached to Maltings, and they kind of look like buildings from different eras. It's all stone, but the Maltings look a bit younger than the rest of them. So yeah, do you want to tell us a bit about the history?
It's founded in 1897 by a gentleman called John Hopkins. The building on the right is the Drum Maltings. So Speyburn was one of the first distillers to have a Drum Maltings installed. So it was built in 1904, but ceased production in 1967. And they basically just closed the doors back there, and all the original equipment is still in there. It's been untouched. So yeah, it's something spectacular to see.
Yeah. So the design's quite interesting though, because there was a famous guy who was involved with it, right?
Yeah, that's it. So John Hopkins brought the expertise of Charles C. Doigan to design and build the distillery, hence the Doig Ventilator, which is now known as the Pagoda Roof. So he was the designer of this distillery. So he's designed numerous distilleries across Speyside, so Speyburn was lucky enough to be one of them.
And was it one of those ones that is deliberately hidden because it was illicit or not?
No, so it was just where the location is. John Hopkins decided to build a distillery in this location primarily for the water resource. We're the only distillery in this area to use the Garanty Burn, as it's known. So that untapped resource of water, which is key in the whisky process, that is pretty much the reason he built this distillery in this location.
Okay, so we're heading in. Just to give you an idea of the location, we sits adjacent to the road into Elgin, just outside Rothes, but we're in a sort of like down below the road. Is this a valley? Is this a glen?
Yes, it's a valley, and that's primarily where obviously the water source, the water runs off the hills and into the burn, hence where we get our water supply from.
Yeah, so it's set back from the road, so you'll see if you're coming in. You might not know what it is, because it's not totally obvious from the road, right?
No, it's quite well hidden by the trees. But there used to actually be a railway line that used to run right along the side of the distillery back in the day, so most of our raw materials, like our barley, would come onto site by railway and be offloaded here to be taken into the Maltings.
Handy.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, so it's lovely. It's a really nice day. I don't know if you hear any birds singing. But yeah, so we're heading off into
the Drum Maltings.
The Drum Maltings. Oh, wow. So we've walked in and it's pretty vast. Going up some stairs to, wow, yeah, this is pretty cool. So as the name suggests, there are lots of drums, which would have done the malting, but yeah, very much left in the condition that it would have been all those years ago. Just going up the stairs now to the very top. So it's original kind of wooden floors. The malt bins are all painted light blue. Wow, so this is the malting floor.
So basically, this is basically the start of the process of the drum maltings. This is where the barley storage area is. So when the barley came in, it would be laid on this floor. It would be initially through the dresser, the old portier's dresser, up through the top there, through the elevator, and be spread onto the floor, ready to be used in the process below. So this is basically the start. It's just a storage area. As I said before, this place was built in 1904 and ceased production in 1967, and they basically shut the doors and what you see just now is original equipment in its original state from back then, so quite a bit of history and uniqueness about Speyburn.
Yeah, it could be a museum.
Yeah, pretty much.
And so this, so to give some context, this would be the, is this the floor that the guys would have, like, would they get, you get the monkey, well, I can't describe it, the monkey shoulder from, because
yes,
you're moving the barley.
So pretty much back in the day, it would have been a traditional floor maltings, and then when the equipment came in to play the old drums, that's what basically, it was modern technology back in 1905. It basically replaced the maltman from shoving the malt over the shoulder. So yeah, it's, I like to use this terminology. So this is like the Tesla of that era. It's a modern technology. It was never heard of, and we were the first distillery in Scotland to implement it. So again, quite unique for the industry. So.
And it's amazing it's still all intact. So you, no one's come along and sold it, or
yes, it's not been touched. This is actually obviously a listed building by Historic Scotland, so we can't touch the building. Yeah, all the original equipment is still here, and it's beauty.
Right, so we're on the second floor now. So yeah, what would happen here?
So we've just come from the first floor where the barley storage area is. So once we're ready to start processing the barley, to turn it to malt the barley, we would basically put batches of barley into these steeps, where we would soak the barley over the period of time. So basically just increasing the moisture of the barley, just tricking the barley to think that it's spring, so you're starting the germination process, so you're basically starting to grow the barley again. And then there you would drain your water, fill it back up, drain it, fill it back up, and you're just increasing your moisture from 5% up to 45% before the start of the germination. So as I said before, you're tricking the barley to thinking it's spring to start growing. And then from there, we would drop each steep into one of the two drums below us, and that would be the start of the germination, really. So back in the olden days, where traditional floor maltings, once the malt has, the barley has been steeped in water, it's been soaked, it'd be laid on a traditional floor, and that's where you would get the maltman going along, with what you call the monkey shoulder, when you're turning the floor by your shovel. So what we're going down to see next on the drums is basically taking that technology step forward, and you're basically removing the labour intensive side of the job by installing this equipment. So from the steeps, we would take what is known as green malt now, after we've soaked the barley, and then one steep would be split into two of the drums. And basically what the drum, as I said before, you fill the green malt onto the drum, and this drum just rotates round and round. And that's basically just moving, keeping the barley moving and stopping it from knitting together. Because obviously with germination you get natural heat. And if you get natural heat, if you left it on the floor in the drums without turning it, then barley would knit together and it would become useless. So that's what these drums do, turn it. And that just basically replicates the old maltman. You'd be turning the barley floor by hand with a shovel and a rake. So this is what basically this removed the old manual labour from back in the day.
So it's a bit like a tumble dryer for barley.
Pretty much, yeah.
So how long would it have taken right from the top to the bottom?
Probably roughly about 3 days. It would, from start to finish, for us to be ready to use the malted barley.
So is there any reason why they're all blue? Is that just a design thing?
No, I think that was just what the colour they were painted when they got installed. On the side of it, you'll see Hennings pneumatic malting system. So that was the engineering company that installed it, I believe. Reading by the history books, it's all German equipment. It was built in Germany and then shipped across, and then Hennings installed it all. But it was the first of its kind back then, 1904, so.
It looks amazing. It looks like you could just come in and flick a switch and it would all work again.
I said before, it'd probably need a bit of TLC, a bit of WD-40, but yeah, it's mostly mechanical-driven belts and pulleys, so yeah, I don't think it would take much to get it going again. But it's nice to have. It's a little piece of history, and it's like you're stepping back in time, because this building has been untouched since 1967.
So bar a few electrical wires, it looks like it could be like 19... What did you say?
1904.
Yeah, 1904, yeah. It looks like
that's
it could be.
That's what it was installed, so.
Having seen how the old distillery would have run and being really impressed by how pristine the equipment in there still looks, it was back to modern day, and outside, Ewan showed us where the distilling process begins.
So basically now this is the start of the process, so going back from the drum maltings, we used to process our own barley, now we take in malt from commercial maltings, and this is our malt intake. So we take in 9 loads a week here at Speyburn. Bales is an elevator system, up into one of our four storage bins that we have on site. We process 250 ton a week here at Speyburn, so we do 40 marshes at 6.25 ton. So although it's quite a small, unique traditional distillery, we're quite a big hit on volume-wise, so we're 4.5 million litres a year.
So basically it just looks like a load of manhole covers on the ground, but it goes up and then there's a silver, steel chimney, not a thing?
Conveyor,
yeah, sorry, I'm trying to describe it. Yeah, there's like a sort of pipe thing, like so conveyor that goes up.
There's basically an elevator and then a conveyor, and it takes the malt, carries the malted barley into one of our four storage bins that we have on site. Yeah, so it doesn't look very pleasant, aesthetically pleasing, but it's our main source of malt intake to get our raw materials into the site.
Nice. So it's quite noisy in there. This is where the malt is obviously getting processed, yeah?
So what you see here is two of our four malt storage bins. So this is where we take our malted barley in. Each bin holds 28 tonne, and then the building next door is a mill room. So that's where we process the malted barley. So basically we pass 6.25 tonnes through a mill, which is known as a bobby mill. There's not many bobby mills left in the industry, so we're unique to still have one. And it basically processes a four-row mill. Basically top two rolls crack the husk of the barley, and the bottom rolls basically crush it into a fine grist, and that's what we are looking to get, is basically access to the starches within the malted barley, and that's what we use in the next part of the processing, the mashing.
So why a bobby mill and not a Porteous mill? Because you've got a Porteous in there.
Yeah, so it's quite controversial, yeah. I think the bobby mill, we believe, has been here 70 plus years. It gets serviced once a year, and it's like the heart of the distillery. It's a vital piece of equipment. Without that, we can't make Scotch whisky.
Is it a bit like Porteous? There's like one guy who knows how to fix it.
Actually, the gentleman who fixes the mill is a gentleman called Ronnie Lee. He's a Welshman, and he basically services and sorts all the mills in space in Scotland and in England and Wales and Ireland.
He's the guy.
He is the main man. I think Porteous went out of business a long time ago. Yeah, he's the expert when it comes to mills.
And luckily he's training up his son, I've heard. So
he's got two sons.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
He's got two sons, so he's keeping it in the family, and hopefully they'll take over him when he retires.
Ewan showed me how the staff at Speyburn have gone above and beyond in creating a space that has acknowledged and celebrates the life of the distillery, both past and present. They've done this by incorporating and engineering parts of the old buildings into new ones, creating displays of old tools and equipment, and painting and crafting pieces of original artwork. I was shown how much the distillery is run digitally from a central hub where technicians keep an eye on temperatures and measures, jobs that would have been much more hands-on in the past.
This is cool.
So when you walk through the distillery, even the floor you walk on, so back in 2015 during the upgrades, what you're standing on is old reclaimed tiles that came off the old building, and the guys who work here basically created all this flooring from old reclaimed tiles. So there's been a lot of blood, sweat and tears that went into what you see here today. All the little artefacts that are on the walls, this is all created by the guys on site as well. So there's a lot of passion and enthusiasm and commitment that's gone into creating what Speyburn is. So what we see here in this room is, once we've passed 6.25 tonnes of malt through our mill, this is our grist bin, so this is our holding vessel for the grist before we start using it in the mashing process. And again, you'll see some little artefacts in the wall. So again, this is all being created by the guys on site. So
wow, you've got some creative people working here.
Although we've not been open to visitors in the past, the facility is ready for visitors. But when you see talented stuff like this, the artwork, it's something unique. It's the first time I've seen something like this in my 26 years in the industry. We're lucky we've got a talented bunch.
And they've just done it. It's not been like part of a programme, they've just gone out and done it.
They just went out and done it themselves. So this is our mash house. So this is where we mix 6.25 tonnes of grist with hot spring water. And that allows us to convert the starches within the mash, converts into sugar liquid, which is known as wort. So we take that wort from the mash tun, we cool it down to 20 degrees and pump it to one of our 19 wash bags that we have on site, and then add yeast.
And this is the warm bit?
This is the warm bit. This is But me mashing, it's 65.2 degrees, so because it's a stainless steel mash tun, it's really warm.
Because that's sometimes they're wooden, aren't they?
The washbacks are wooden. So we're quite unique at Speyburn. We have a mixture of wooden and stainless. So again, during the upgrade, we kept traditional wooden washbacks. So we've got 4 and we've got 15 stainless steel washbacks. So that's the modern part. So in total, we've got 19. And that allowed us to increase our production, as I said before, from 1.9 to 4.5 million litres a year. So this is where we pump the sugary liquid, which is known as wort, and this is where we add the yeast, and we create a light beer liquid, or 8%, which is known as wash. In these washbacks, you're basically converting your sugar liquid into alcohol by adding yeast. So you get 3 byproducts from fermentation, which is known. So you get heat, alcohol, and CO2. So all these washbacks are producing CO2 because of the natural reaction, the conversion from wash to alcohol.
It's quite a long room. There's a lot of them. Is this about standards for a distillery?
In some distilleries you'll see this. What you're standing is actually an old warehouse. So we had 2 warehouses on site. We basically gutted this one and we put lots of equipment in to allow us to increase our production. And it was the only space that we had. Rather than building onto the distillery, we basically utilised what was here and created this wonderful tun room.
And made it warm, because warehouses aren't traditionally warm.
No, and because obviously you get natural heat from the fermentation, so these washbacks got to about 36 degrees during the process, and it obviously gives us a lot of heat, so yeah, quite warm.
Yeah, nice. So on the wall, the history of Speyburn, there was a whisky released for Queen Victoria's Jubilee.
Back in 1897, when the distillery first opened, John Hopkins basically got the distillery up and going and managed to get spirit produced that year because of the Queen's 60th Jubilee.
That was the goal?
That was the goal. So they actually distilled the mash with no windows and doors.
We ventured out onto the roof of the distillery to see the worm tubs up close.
So we've gone towards the still room, but we're outside because you've got worm tubs.
Yeah.
Oh wow, I've never actually seen one of these before. No.
We can bring people up close and personal, so we can walk on top of the worm tubs because obviously we've got walkways. And so this basically supports the 2 spirit stills. And this is basically just the cooling elements. This is like it works as just like a normal condenser, but it's a worm tub full of water, which basically condenses your vapour back into a liquid.
So they were quite common, but they're not really that common
anymore,
are they?
I think there's only about 15 to 20 distilleries that have got worm tubs left.
So just to describe it for anyone that doesn't know, it's a massive tub of water that we're standing almost in the middle of on a walkway. There's a line arm coming out of the distillery, there's a hole in the... Is that right, the line arm?
Yeah, that's correct, yes.
Coming out from one of the stills and it goes through the water and goes back in, so it... Essentially, what you said, to do with the vapours.
Yeah, so basically, once you boil your spirit still up, your vapours rise down your line arm and into your coil, and it condenses from a vapour back into a liquid and then into your safe. So basically, this big tub, which is known as a worm tub, basically just allows that process to happen. Yeah, so we're walking down, we'll go into the still house here. So what you can see is we've got 1 wash still and 2 spirit stills. So here at Speyburn, we pump 27,000 litres of fermented wash into our wash still. We distill it off, and then what we get is known as low wine. So we're taking our alcoholic strength from 8% in our wash back up to 21%. So once we collect our low wines and our vat on the left, then we mix the low wines with 4 shots and feints from the previous run, and that gives us our charge for the spirit still. So then we're going from 21% up to 72%. And then here at Speyburn, we cut our spirit at 62, so from 72% down to 62, that is known as the heart of the run. That is the spirit that we collect forward for maturation in the warehouse.
And we should probably say smells really nice in here, so how would you describe the smell?
So if we walk down and we go to the safe, you'll get green, fruity, apple notes coming from the spirit safe, and that's the fruitiness of the Speyburn character coming through. So this is basically our spirit safe. So this is used to monitor and control our spirit stills going on off spirit. What you can see on the right hand side is hydrometers and thermometers. So again, old equipment, but we still use it to this day in modern distilleries to measure the strength and the temperature of the spirit. This is also probably one of the smallest safes in Scotland as well.
Just because of the size of the distillery?
Yeah, for size, do most of our copper work. But they built a safe during the upgrade as well.
Yeah, so for anyone that's never seen one, it's basically kind of, it's a gold box with like a viewing window, and there are two kind of taps that are filling up bowls. So one will be the hearts and sails and, no, foreshore faints and the heart is the whiskey. You'll be better explaining than me.
Basically, the process at the moment, you've got foreshore, spirit and faints. So your four shots is your like your unwanted sulfury compound spirit that you don't want to take forward, which will affect your character of the spirit. So it's only the heart of the run that we take, which you can see number two spirit still at the moment is on spirit. And then once we hit 62% alcohol, then we put it onto faints. And again, rather than just getting rid of it, we redistill it in the next distillation. So.
And is that quite a high cut point?
It's probably about average, what you see. And then we'll take from 62 for the faints, we'll take it down to about 1.4% alcohol, and then the residual is left over is called spent lees, and then that's just discharged away because it's basically just water.
Right, thank you.
So something else unique about this still house, the floor you're walking on and all the floor, all the walls has been pointed by the operators on site, and again this was all reclaimed tiles that the operators laid. So we said before, as you walk right through the distillery, this is what you see. Heart, passion and commitment has gone into this place.
So they've like literally helped build it?
To a certain extent, yeah. Pretty much.
The final two stops on my tour were the warehouse, followed by a trip to the all-new visitor tasting room and event space, where I got a world-exclusive sample of their festival bottling for this year's Spirit of Speyside.
So here we are going into our one and only warehouse on site. So this is where we store some of our whiskey that we or the new mixed spirit that we produce. The bulk of our spirit leaves site on road tanker and goes down to Airdrie to be filled into casks, primarily because we don't have the capacity here to store everything we make. This warehouse, currently we've got just over 2,700 casks of different types. Majority of them are ex-bourbon. But we also have sherry butts, we've got some puncheons, we've got some hogsheads. We've got quite a variety of different types.
Where do you get your casks from, and do you utilise the Speyside cooperage?
Currently, most of our casks, or all of the casks that we use when we do fill-ins on site, so we only do two fill-ins a year. We do one for the customer and one for ourselves, and that is just to make sure we have a fill-in from every year stored at Speyburn. But all of our casks come up from Airdrie, our head office, where we have our own cooperage down there, so they supply the casks. So
we've gone through the whole process and now we're at the whiskies. So could you tell us a bit about the core range from Speyburn?
So the core range that we have here at Speyburn, so I'll start from the bottom and work our way up. So the first one we have on offer is the Braddon Orach. So it's a non-aged spirit, but it's got a nice golden colour. It's very smooth for non-aged, so good place to start for anyone. Braddon Orach is Gaelic for the golden salmon, hence the logo that we have in the bottle. And then going up the range, we have 10-year-old, so it's been matured in ex-bourbon casks, first, second and third fill, for a minimum of 10 years. Again, a nice deep gold colour. Again, lots of rich vanilla notes coming through because of the bourbon cask. And then we go into a little bit more premium, where we have a Speyburn 15-year-old. So this has been matured in bourbon casks firstly, and then we finished off in ex-sherry butts for a minimum between three years. And then the 18-year-old, again, been matured in bourbon and finished off 4 years. So 14 years in bourbon and then 4 years in ex-sherry butts. So 18-year-old, really deep colour. That fruitiness coming through from the sherry, beautiful and sublime and smooth. Probably my favourite.
I was going to say, what's your favourite? But yeah, what is the favourite of folk who... I was going to say folk who come to visit, but they don't. What would you say is the most popular?
Again, it just depends on what people's taste, because everyone's got different smells and taste buds. But probably the 10 is probably our baseline where people will likely most start. Although the Braddon Orach, again, for non-aged, for me, is quite nice as well. Again, another good starting point. So probably between the Braddon Orach and the 10 is probably the baseline. And then if you want something a bit more special, a bit more rich, something a bit different. Obviously, with the sherry finish, then you're aiming for the 15 and 18. Okay.
But now we're going to go behind closed doors to taste something new.
So we'll let you taste the single malt that we're going to be releasing for the Whiskey Festival, which is a single cask.
And it's not going to be able to buy, right? You're going to have to have done the tour. No, you'll be able to buy it.
So everyone who comes on the 125th anniversary tour will get a bottle, a part of the tour. Mm-hmm. But then, because this is a single cask, and I think we've got about 210 bottles, there will be a surplus. So we're going to have them in the shop for people to buy. So there'll be a limited stock, but once they're gone, they're gone.
Can you tell us anything about it on the record?
So it's going to be a cask strength, bottled at 52.6%, single cask. It's been matured in ex-bourbon casks, so it'll be a bourbon only. It was distilled in 2007, so it's about 16-year-old.
Did you have a lot of input to what one you chose, or how did it come about?
So when we were selecting, so we were deciding if we were going to do a single cask or not, then our master blender, Stuart Harvey, decided that we looked at a different number of casks and we picked one that we thought was right for Whiskey Festival. So again, that's just matching them with expressions as well, because we don't want to go too fancy, something that was just fit them in the portfolio without impacting what we have already. So we found a nice 2007 ex-bourbon cask, 16 years old. So so there'll be limited numbers and one off.
I think you can smell the vanilla from the bourbon. It's slightly grassy. Don't know. I mean, I'm probably going to say all these things and you'll be like, no. But no, you can smell the vanilla. There's something else there, though. Like, what are your tasting notes? You're the professional.
I mean, you get on the nose when you've got a nice pale golden colour. It's not as dark as you would normally have, but vanilla sweet toffee notes. So I get Christmas cake, I get fruits, so probably a little bit spicy as well, spicy note.
Oh, it's really smooth. Slightly spicy on the palate, really smooth. You wouldn't think that's cask strength. Because I'm not going to lie, it's not my favourite cask strength, but that is really nice. It's not too strong.
It's nice, isn't it? It's liquid gold.
Yeah. So Ewan, can you tell us your earliest whiskey memory?
I was lucky enough to be born and brought up in distillery, so my father was in the industry before me. And because of his job, we used to move around quite a numerous amount of distilleries. So my first recollection was probably Bladnach Distillery when I was 7 years of age. And I've got two brothers, so me and my brothers used to get quite involved at that. Well, when we were 7 and 8, it was our playgrounds. And then from there, we moved to Islay. And that's where I probably started getting a connection with the industry. I'd be helping out, whether it was in the warehouse or just doing odd jobs, bits and pieces. Yeah, from there I started my career with Allied Distillers, and it's gone from strength to strength, where I've moved down numerous distilleries with Chivas, and then 4 years prior to coming to Inverhouse, I joined William Grant & Sons to look after a maturation site at Dufftown. And then the last year before I came to Inverhouse, I was looking after Balvenie and Carnoustie Distilleries as a process leader. And now, here I am at Spearburn Distillery's manager. So this is my dream job, being able to follow in the footsteps of my father.
And can you tell us, why has the distillery not been open before?
Just an opportunity, because we're our 125th anniversary. Since I've come here, I've seen an opportunity to basically help push the brand. But what we've got here at Spearburn, I feel, is quite unique, and it's a shame not to show it off. What the guys have created in terms of what we have in the cooperage, for me, is quite unique. So what we have now, we've got a facility that we can show people around and give them a taste, and but also show them the uniqueness of the drum molds that we have on site, but also what we have in the distillery in terms of all the stuff that the guys have created, all the hard work and passion that has gone into creating what Spearburn is today.
For anyone that's lucky enough to have got a ticket for your Spirit Speyside offering, what can they expect?
So what they'll expect is a behind the scenes tour with an intimate tour that they'll get right up and close and personal with the equipment, the distillery. They'll get to speak to operators, they'll get a right behind the scenes tour that they might not get at other sites.
What are your future plans? So obviously we're starting kind of mid-March, what's kind of happening for the rest of the year?
So hopefully we'll do the Spirit Speyside Whiskey Festival, we'll see how that goes, and hopefully it's successful, and then the plan is hopefully to open up full-time some point in June.
Nice. So anyone who's not managed to get a ticket because it's sold out, can hopefully be able to come back in the summer.
Yeah, people will be able to come back here after the Whisky Festival and have the opportunity to come round and see what they've missed the first chance. But the people who will get to come here, the lucky ticket holders, then they're going to see something unique and special, hopefully.
Well, thank you very much for showing us around and best of luck with Spirits Bayside.
Thank you very much.
I'm delighted that we are launching the Scotsman's Grand Awards with 16 category awards to recognise Scotland's flourishing dining, drinking and hospitality sector. We want to hear about the individuals, establishments and products that make the Scottish food and drink sector what it is, so nominate them now at www.scranawards.co.uk, no later than the 12th of May. Categories include Scottish Chef of the Year, Sustainability Award, Newcomer of the Year and Best Whisky, plus many, many more. All finalists will be invited to attend a special awards ceremony on June the 19th at Platform in Glasgow. Thank you to our headline partner, Benriach Distillery, and our category sponsors, Chefworks, Scotch Whisky Association and Glasgow Distillery, without which the event wouldn't be possible. Thanks to Ewan and all the team at the Speyburn Distillery for being my guests on this episode, and thanks to you too for listening. Please remember to rate, review and subscribe so you never miss an episode of Scran. Scran is a laudable podcast that's co-produced and hosted by me, Rosin Derskine, and co-produced, edited and mixed by Kelly Crichton.